When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following is a presentation of the Belly Up Sports Media Network.
Here's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove podcast. We're talking NFL draft, recapping winners, losers, all that good stuff. We're talking some playoffs and other sports, as well as NASCAR headed to Kansas. We'll be talking with Caleb McChesney about that. That's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove podcast.
From Belly Up Sports and the Belly Up Podcast Network, you're listening to the Sports Stove Podcast with your host, Vince Stover.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
Welcome into an all-new edition of the Sports Stove Podcast, presented by Righteous Felon Jerky. Join the flavor revolution at righteousfelon.com. Use the code STOVE15. You're going to get 15% off your purchase. Again, that's STOVE15. I'm your host, Vince Stover. I'm joined, as I am every single week, by my dad, Dale Stover. Dad, how you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Like I said, the NFL draft was exciting like we thought it would be, and that was a lot building up to it, but it was really good there. And of course, you know, we're in the midst of playoffs now with, you know, the NHL and the NBA and a lot going on this time of year. And, of course, we've got the NFL, we got, you know, rookie camps and OTAs, and things will continue to build there. I guess we'll get the football schedule out sometime this month, and that'll be interesting to see. And, of course, always a lot of talk about things going on in college sports, and I think there will continue to be a lot discussed about that. So a lot going on.
A lot going on indeed. Last weekend was the NFL draft, and I watched a large portion of that, enjoyed being a part of the Belly Up Sports draft special also. If you missed out on that, then boy, did you miss out on a good time. But let's talk about what teams missed out and which teams did not in the NFL draft. It's hard for us to grade full drafts, honestly. I mean, the reality is once we get past day two, it's few or far between the players that we know about. Definitely to a degree of giving any real opinion on. So let's start with the first round, Dad, and we're going to get to the Michael Penix pick in a little bit. So let's pass that for the moment being. Was there anything else that surprised you in the first round?
Well, you know, there was obviously a few surprises there. You know, Minnesota kind of stayed where they were at. So that wasn't a surprise from that end. The biggest surprise was Atlanta's pick. Obviously, I don't think anybody saw them taking a quarterback and taking Penix. So, you know, that would have been one of the biggest surprises. Otherwise, there was some movement in the draft, but not, you know, not an over amount. And I think the players, for the most part, that we thought would go in the first round is who went in the first round. So I don't know if there was a lot of great surprises there. There were six quarterbacks taken, which I knew that could happen. And that didn't surprise me a whole lot, even though I had only predicted five. There were a couple of players dropped to the second round that were maybe a little surprising, you know, mainly the safety from Iowa and, you know, some players like that. So it turned out to be a lot of good picks early in the second round also.
Yeah, I mean, 14 straight offensive players to start off the first round made it weird just because – you got all these really good defensive players that now were going to be in the bottom half of the first round, which obviously meant somebody was going to get pushed out of the first round, at least guys that we expected to go there for sure. Before, again, we're going to get to Michael Penix, but before we get to that, Buffalo trades down twice, once with Kansas City and then again with Carolina. Both times they traded, those teams selected wide receivers. Buffalo ends up picking a wide receiver with their first pick, which ended up being on the first pick of round two. Do you think Buffalo got enough? Because it didn't seem like they really added much from those trades. More pick swaps, moving a little higher in the rounds and where they swapped picks. But ultimately, they gave up three receivers as a result of these trade downs. Xavier Worthy went to Kansas City. Ricky Pearsall went to San Francisco. Xavier Leggett to Carolina before finally Keon Coleman being drafted by the Bills. We all knew the Bills needed a receiver, and it seemed like they gave up or didn't receive at least much at all to lose three shots at a wide receiver, or at two shots technically, but lose out on three receivers. Do you think that they got what they were hoping to get? And do you think it was a good move for Buffalo to move down?
Well, again, as I've read a little bit about it, people rank Buffalo's draft pretty well, mainly because of the guys they got later on. Obviously, when they got down to there, I don't know if they tried to trade up earlier for someone or not. When they got to where their pick was, obviously, they didn't value anyone enough. They felt like it would be a gain to go down. And the receiver they got, you know, what was not a first round guy, but he was ranked pretty high. So, you know, a little surprised, because I think I predicted Buffalo to go way up and take, you know, one of the top receivers right off the bat. And that didn't happen. But as I've read a little bit about, you know, people grading the drafts, Buffalo grades out pretty high with a lot of the other players that they got.
I was really surprised when they trade with Kansas City. Kansas City's kind of their arch nemesis right now. They're the team they're going to have to go through to get to the Super Bowl. And so to trade with them was a little odd. Then to trade with them where they came up and got a receiver, I thought was really odd. And then they trade with Carolina again, and Carolina selects a receiver. I thought, my goodness, does Buffalo even know what in the world is going on? did they end the night okay, or the weekend okay? Sure, I suppose they did. It just, to me, that didn't make a whole lot of sense. Those ones, there's one I really scratched my head on the first night of the draft. The other one, Dad, is the Indianapolis Colts. They select Leatu Latu from UCLA, the edge rusher. He becomes the very first defensive player off the board. So ahead of Byron Murphy, ahead of Quinyon Mitchell, ahead the other guy's just Terrion Arnold. So why? This is a guy who was medically retired just a couple years ago. I would be surprised if he lasts in the league for 8 to 10 years. Like, why would Indianapolis be willing to take a risk in round one on a guy that's injured when they could have had literally any defender in the draft?
Yeah, that was surprising. And I knew you and I had talked before the draft, and you felt like he was one that was a real risk and it could even drop, you know, out of the first round. Now, earlier, of course, the mock drafts were all over the place this year. I had seen him up pretty high in a couple of them. So again, you know, it comes down to every team's evaluation. You would assume their medical people really check this out, and they feel you know, everything is stable. Sometimes these medical deals, you know, people are hesitant, and then you find out somebody took a chance on them and wow, it was great because they didn't have any problems at all. On the other hand, you know, there was a lot of red flags there. So, and, you know, Indianapolis making a defensive choice made sense. But like you said, they could have had the pick of anybody defensively in the draft. And it seems like there would have been some others, even if you didn't go edge rusher, that would have been very safe, you know, the best cornerback or whatever the case might be. That was surprising. Wasn't too surprising to me that they stayed there, but taking Latu, that was, and him being the first defensive guy off the board, wouldn't have figured that at all.
Yeah, I mean, if he was the third or fourth defensive player off the board, you can live with it, I think. But I mean, granted, they know more than I do, and maybe they are perfectly good on where he's at. Maybe he has a long and successful career, but it seems awfully risky. And if you like him more than Dallas Turner and you like him more than Jared Verse and you like him more than Byron Murphy, I mean, okay. But to me, that was a really risky pick for Indianapolis. Let's talk about Michael Penix Jr. I'm going to see if I can get the dog to be quiet. but give me your thoughts. We haven't really talked much about this yet. Michael Penix Jr. to Atlanta.
No, I, you know, like I said, I liked him. I was intrigued, but, you know, he wasn't ranked nearly as high, and a lot of people didn't even have him going in the first round. I think if, you know, you've heard a lot of back and forth about this. If Kirk Cousins turns out to be good for Atlanta for the next 2 or 3 years, then this could be a good thing, because Penix might be a guy that really develops well and they would have someone down the line. Cousins is not going to play necessarily that long. So obviously that seemed to be Atlanta's plan. You know, it was just a little surprising with where they was at in the draft. You know, could have they used their second pick and traded up later in the first round and got Penix, taking him where they did? You know, that was definitely a head scratcher for sure.
So I have listened to a whole lot of opinions on this, and when it first happened, I was in shock. I thought this is quite possibly the dumbest pick ever. It didn't make any sense to me at all. It's like, why in the world would you have signed such a large contract to Kirk Cousins and then a month later go out and draft his replacement? It does not make any sense. There is, you know, the talk. Well, they followed the Packer model and they wanted to have the guy of the future in there and he's going to sit behind Kirk Cousins. Well, I mean, I'm not against that necessarily, but how long are you going to sit him? He's not young. And so you sit him behind Kirk Cousins for 3 years. Well, then you're looking at, I don't know, 28-year-old, which isn't old either, but, and is it good for him? Maybe it is. I think this, the amount of pressure this puts on Kirk Cousins coming off an injury, they did not talk to Cousins about this until they were on the clock. So he didn't seem to know this was coming. I think he knew there was a chance that they would take a quarterback, but not at 8. Penix is, again, he's not that, you know, young, untested kid. He's a grown man. He's 24, I believe. So this one was weird for me. And I sat there and I started thinking, I was like, you know what? Pittsburgh got Justin Fields for a 6-round pick. If you're going to draft your quarterback of the future, why not go out and get Justin Fields and let him play for 2 or 3 years or 1 year for that matter? Why spend all that money on Kirk Cousins and draft the guy at number 8? I don't think that I agree with Atlanta. No matter what they say and no matter what happens, I don't think I agree with Atlanta. I do think it's good to have 2 good quarterbacks. And I think we've seen in the NFL, and especially the last couple of years, the importance of having a good backup quarterback. Atlanta now has a good quarterback room. Kirk Cousins to start and Penix to back him up. But the amount of money they spent on Kirk Cousins and the draft capital pick number 8 that they spent on Michael Penix Jr. just seems wrong. And they got their guy, and they got the guy they wanted. And from all the people I've listened to, there were other people that were trying to move up for Penix. So like if they didn't get him at 8, they probably were going to have to get him, you know, pretty soon after. So they wouldn't have been able to move down very far, more than likely. So, you know, kudos to them for sticking to their board, but my goodness, it just seems like they blew it. Whether they blew it in picking Penix or they blew it in signing Kirk Cousins, one way or the other, they blew this. And unless they win the Super Bowls with Kirk Cousins and Michael Penix, then I think this was an absolutely horrible pick for Atlanta at number 8 with the signing of Kirk Cousins. Again, if they didn't sign Kirk Cousins, I don't mind this pick, but they did sign Kirk. Why not go out and sign Sam Darnold? Why not go out and sign? You know, I mean, there was a number of people available. Tyrod Taylor, there's a number of people available that you could have signed or traded for. And I don't know. It just seems really, really weird. We'll see how Kirk Cousins responds to it. You know, he he's not going to say the wrong thing here, but I don't think he likes it. Do you compare this draft pick? I've heard everybody talking about Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers, or Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. And I was thinking, well, I think it might fit more with the Mahomes, Alex Smith line than those other ones. Because I think there was legitimate reason for the Packers to still have Favre and Rodgers playing as long as they did. Whereas Kansas City kind of drafted Mahomes with the intention of, you know, he's going to learn from Alex Smith. He's going to sit for a year and then he's going to play. I feel like Penix is battling for that starting job. Maybe not this season, but next season for sure.
Yeah, that very well could be true. Like I said, you know, people have said, well, they followed the Packer model, but, you know, it's not really a fair comparison because Kirk Cousins is not, you know, Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers from that standpoint, with people sitting behind him. So, and I think when Penix is ready, you know, he will get a shot. You know, Kirk Cousins has a good year. Atlanta's got a lot of talent. So if Kirk Cousins is healthy, I can see him being the quarterback for at least 2 years and seeing how Penix is developing. You're right about Penix's age, but, you know, and again, you know, Cousins may be healthy. You know, how long will his health hold up? You know, we'll see how that goes. Atlanta having a lot of the other talent around it, like I said, that was just a strange pick, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the deal. It's like, I don't know. I mean, you say 2 years for Kirk Cousins. Well, with that kind of talent around him, Kirk Cousins has potential to be sitting in the NFC Championship game in 2 years. Well, then what do you do? I mean, do you have the stones to pull him out and bring in Michael Penix at that point? It just seems like they put everyone in a really bad situation here. And again, if Kirk Cousins gets hurt this year, you've got a quarterback that can come in and play. Plus they still got, I believe Heinicke still on the roster. So, I mean, I'm just intrigued by it. I still don't like it. I kind of wavered back and forth a little bit as I listened to everyone's opinion on it. At the end of the day, Dad, I just don't think it was a good move for Atlanta, and really surprised with how it went down. Let's talk about winners and losers, and then we might come back and cover a few more players, but want to see some kind of thoughts on. And I don't know, I've got five winners and three losers in this draft, Dad. So I want to start with people that we like, drafts that we liked. I don't know. We haven't talked, so I don't know if you broke it down this way or not. Do you have teams that you think came out winners in this draft?
I looked at that a little bit to see. And again, there are several, you know, that, people marked with a high grade, but ones that stuck out to me, you know, I think Arizona, had a good draft. I think they did well there, to help rebuild in their situation. I think Kansas City had a really good draft. When you look at where they're at, the people they picked up, you would think, you know, the Super Bowl winning team at the last pick, but it looked like they helped theirself. The Rams, I think they had a good draft from there. Philadelphia definitely helped theirself. And there are several others, you know, you got Seattle and different ones around there. You know, a little intrigued with, you know, when we talked about mock drafts, the one constant in every mock draft was Tennessee. And sure enough, that guy all went earlier to the Chargers, which was probably a really good pick, you know, to protect their quarterback. So, you know, in the first round, I think a lot of people helped themselves, at least to some extent. But those are ones that seem to look really good to me, with Arizona, Kansas City, the Rams, Philadelphia, maybe.
So I don't think there was a lot of teams that had really bad drafts this year. I thought there was a lot of, you know, middle of the road things. Philadelphia is the only team I have on my list that you mentioned. Quinion Mitchell comes to them. They get a top corner at 22, which was huge for them. They followed up in the second round by getting Cooper DeJean from Iowa, which is everyone thinks is a very, very solid pick. They get Will Shipley, the running back out of Clemson, in the fourth round. And then they get Jeremiah Trotter, linebacker, out of Clemson. He was a guy I was hoping Green Bay would end up with. Again, he's got the bloodlines and all that kind of stuff. And so I thought that Philadelphia really did have a good draft. They got better on defense and again, bolstered kind of the defense. Jalix Hunt, I don't know much about him, out of Houston Christian, the edge rusher in the third round. So I agree with you, Philadelphia. I thought they were good. Dad, I thought the Jets had a really good draft as well. Olu Fashanu from Penn State in the first round. Malachi Corley, a lot of people love Malachi Corley, wide receiver out of Western Kentucky at the top of the third. Braylon Allen, running back out of Wisconsin. I really like Braylon Allen. He didn't have a great year this last year, but he's shown some stuff in the past. Quartez Stiggers from the CFL, the CFL Player of the Year as well in the fifth round. And they get a quarterback in Jordan Travis as well out of Florida State in the fifth round. And I think that's one to watch for down the road, because, again, there's no question he's going to get a chance to sit. And so maybe you give him a couple of years and all of a sudden he's a legit prospect, or at least a solid backup in the NFL from there. So I like the Jets draft. Let's talk about Houston. I think Houston was winners this week as well. Houston gets Kamari Lassiter. They did not have a first round pick, but in the second round, they get Kamari Lassiter and Blake Fisher. Fisher, an O-lineman out of Notre Dame. Both really solid picks. And, Dad, congratulations to Cousin Cade. Cade Stover, tight end out of Ohio State, goes in the fourth round there as well. I love the fit for him in Houston. I like what Houston did in this draft. Let's talk about the Lions. I thought the Lions had an incredible draft, Dad. Terrion Arnold at 24. Enos Rakestraw Jr. in the second round. Two really good cornerbacks there in Detroit. And then let's see here. They got the safety out of Utah as well. I liked really their top two picks, I guess, in Detroit. And then the other one, Dad, is Baltimore. I thought the Ravens had the best draft overall. Nate Wiggins in the first round out of Clemson, the cornerback. They go get an offensive lineman out of Washington, Roger Rosengarten, who had a really good year and is going to be a really good player. Dontez Walker, the receiver out of North Carolina in the fourth round. TJ Tampa, who I've saw mocked many times in the first round. He goes in the fourth round there as well, the defensive back out of Iowa State. And then they get a few other guys in here as well. So I thought Baltimore had a really strong draft as well there. So I thought all those teams were winners this week. Let's talk about losers in this draft, Dad. Who did you think lost in this draft?
Well, like you said, I don't know if there's a lot of big losers. You know, the Atlanta one is up for question, no doubt about it. I think it's the same way with Denver, you know, picking Bo Nix. Now, if he ends up being the guy, then that'll be good. Otherwise, I don't know that they helped themselves a whole lot with this draft there. I'm not sure about Carolina either, for a team that needed a lot, if they, you know, got a lot there. So as far as just, you know, big time losers, I don't know about that. I know we'll talk a little bit about this, and you know, obviously I'd be prejudiced, but the Bears had a very interesting draft. Obviously they you know, didn't have a lot of draft picks, and so that was interesting there. The quarterback, if he ends up being great, then that will be good. You never know about a quarterback like that. The second pick was really perplexing to me. Very, very good wide receiver. They already have, you know, potentially two good wide receivers. To me, they could have helped themselves either more with a great defensive player or an offensive lineman. You know, but we'll see that.
I think that
may end up being tremendous having that. You never know.
Yeah. I think your Packer fandom's blinding you on this one, Dad. Roma Dunsdale is the right pick. Keenan Allen's a very good football player, but he never survives a whole season. DJ Moore is a good football player. Adding Roma Dunsdale to that offense along with Cole Kmet and Caleb Williams gives that offense a chance to succeed, something that they did not give Justin Fields a chance to do. I think that this offense is really, really good. And I think you look at Green Bay and what they've got with their receiving core, three really good receivers. I think you look at what Cincinnati has done, which is probably the epitome of these trios of receivers. Cincinnati's had three really good receivers as well. I think Chicago did the right thing. I think I don't think they could have gone wrong, honestly, at number nine. I think had they gone offensive line, that would have been helpful to them. I think had they gone defense, whether it's edge or defensive tackle, I think that would have been good for them too. I think they had a lot to choose from, and I don't think they could have picked wrong, Dad. I think Chicago did really good in the first round. The rest of the draft is what it is, a third round, fourth round, and fifth round pick. I don't know anything about those guys, but I thought round one, Chicago did a really good job and was surprised they did it, to be completely honest with you as well. You talked about Denver, though. I agree with you. I think Denver's a loser in this draft. Bo Nix, you know, I mean, he might be fine. he might be fine. I don't know. I didn't think their draft. I didn't put Atlanta as a loser, but I probably could have. It's not even just about the first pick. It's about the rest of the picks. Nothing really stands out. In Denver, Troy Franklin, the Oregon wide receiver, it's probably a solid pick. But, you know, I don't know. I thought Denver was a loser. I didn't think they got really a lot better. I got Indianapolis as a loser. Again, I think Latu was a dangerous, dangerous pick. I don't like it. Adonai Mitchell is probably going to be good there. And again, a weapon. I didn't think they got themselves really a whole lot better this weekend. And then the last one, Dad, is the Jacksonville Jaguars. They trade down to 23. They end up drafting Brian Thomas Jr., who some people are really big on. But again, if you look at the rest of their draft, there's just not a lot there to be excited about. You mentioned Carolina. I actually thought Carolina had a nice little run there. Xavier Leggett, I'm not sold on him necessarily, but Jonathan Brooks is by many considered to be the best running back in this draft. Trevon Wallace is a solid linebacker as well. I thought overall they did decent in Carolina, and they're going to be bad no matter what. but I thought they did decent in this draft, in my opinion, at the very least. Let's talk about Green Bay just because we got to do it. I didn't love the Jordan Morgan pick in round one, although the more I've read up and listened about him, I like him more and more. They get a really solid linebacker in round two, a couple safeties throughout the three safeties throughout the draft, a running back out of USC and Marshawn Lloyd, a couple more linebackers, and Dad, they got the quarterback of the future in Michael Pratt. Actually, a lot of people liked Michael Pratt and were surprised that he made it to the seventh round. And so the Packers may have a new number two quarterback replacing the Penn State kid, who I still don't understand why they drafted last year.
Yeah, I think the Packers had a good draft. You know, we'll see how the first pick pans out, if he tends up to be, you know, it ends up winning a starting job or not. But the linebackers, they have defense, they helped themselves. That's where they had the needs. They needed linebackers. I think they got two good ones with a lot of speed. They needed help in the defensive backfields. I think they got that with safety. The first kid they picked, Bullard from Georgia, has also played the slot a lot in college. I think he has some flexibility. Some people are very, very high on the guy from Oregon. And then the guy from Oregon State is probably the biggest true safety of the bunch. So I think they helped themselves. Really intrigued about the running back from USC. That could really add, be the, you know, second guy, third guy they need there. He's supposed to have good hands, can catch the ball, didn't catch the ball a lot in college, but a small, compact, very fast guy, you know, who I think can come in and back up behind, you know, the new running back there. So I you know, overall, as a Packer fan, I'm pretty pleased with that. And we'll just see how that goes.
Yeah, definitely. Two more teams I want to hit on before we shift pages there, and that is New England. They get their quarterback, the guy that they were going for, the guy they had lined up all along in the sixth round, Joe Milton out of Tennessee, the future quarterback of the New England Patriots. I kid a little bit. Drake May, of course, at number three. It became pretty apparent that that's where they were going to go as we led up to the draft. And that is where they went. But, Dad, one of the things when you look at New England's roster, you realize, man, they don't have a whole lot to help Drake May out right now. But in the second round, they go get Jalen Polk out of Washington, a really good wide receiver. So if you package Drake May and Jalen Polk together, you got a little bit of hope, I think, if you're a New England fan right now. And honestly, I don't know, Dad. I was not a Joe Milton guy, even as a Tennessee fan. I didn't think Joe Milton was an NFL quarterback. So I'm not sure if he even wins a job there in New England. But that being said, I like the Drake May, Jalen Polk combo. Any thoughts on them?
No, I think, you know, they took the quarterback, you know, the best one available at that time. And we'll just see. New England's got some rebuilding to do and a lot to do. Like you said, I think the Jets had a good draft. So that division's going to – it may be a year or two, but hopefully they got a quarterback they can build on. And if they do, they'll probably be all right.
Yeah, he's going to become best friends with Hunter Henry probably because – him and Polk is about all there is to throw to right now. New Orleans, I at least got to mention it. Josiah Ezrim, drafted in the 7th round. Josiah's been a guest on my show several times throughout the last couple of years. EKU offensive lineman. Great story. Came in as a defensive tackle, transitioned to offensive line, and just blew up as soon as he moved to the O-line. So huge congrats to Josiah. Hoping to get him on the show later here in the year after kind of things slowed down a little bit for him. But congrats to him. And then Logan Blake doesn't sign. He gets an invite to the Packers mini camp. And if he gets signed there, then great. If not, he'll head to New Orleans for their mini camp as well. I have talked with Logan. He is going to come on the show once things again calm down for him and kind of talk about his journey as well. Congrats to both of those guys. And both of them were fun interviews. Josiah, like I said, he's been on, I think, 3 or 4 times. And so that's exciting. It's exciting to see. Saw the video of Josiah getting drafted and just the excitement that he had as well. I know that everyone's buzzing around here because, you know, when you get one of your own that gets drafted, it's a pretty neat experience. So congrats to both of those guys. And hopefully we'll be talking to them here down the road as well. Dad, we're running up on time here. Let's hit quickly on the NHL playoffs. I have no idea what's going on with it, so you want to give us an update?
We've got 5 series that are already settled. We only have 3 that are wide open, or not wide open, but one could be settled tonight. Buffalo or Boston and Toronto. And Matthews is not playing tonight for Toronto. So there, then we got 2 more games tomorrow night. We got Vancouver and Nashville. Vancouver leads 3-2, but Nashville is still in it and playing at home. And then you've got Dallas and Vegas. Las Vegas. Yeah. And Dallas won last night, so they're up 3-2, and they play at Vegas tomorrow night. So 3 divisions still to be set. The other 5 are there, been from really good hockey so far. You know, been following the Predators. Heartbreaker on Sunday night. That was just tragic. But we got a chance. They've won 2 games in Vancouver. So if they can win tomorrow night in Nashville, they'll have a chance in Game 7. But I think the NHL's very, very pleased. There's been some very good games. And I think these playoffs are going to be hotly contested as they head toward the Stanley Cup.
So far, all the higher seeds have advanced with the exception of Colorado advancing over the number 2 Jets as well. So the Stars and the Canucks seem to be on page to move forward, both of them leading in their series as well. Dad, you're Boston Celtics. I know you follow them every single – I mean, you can't sleep without checking in on what's going on with your Boston Celtics. So have you paid any attention to the NBA playoffs and what's going on there?
I just kept up a little bit and that the Celtics got through their first round. I know they got upset there in 1 game. So we'll see. Yeah, I listened a little bit on the radio to a station that talks about, you know, the Bucks. And so I could keep up a little bit on who's winning and losing. And I do look at the scores now just to see. And as it goes on through the line, you know, I'll probably pay a little more attention to it. But as long as my Celtics are winning, we're okay.
Yeah, the Thunder swept the Pelicans. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the Kentucky alum. Well, he's not didn't technically graduate, but nonetheless, he's had a phenomenal season. Clippers and Mavs are in a close series. Dallas leads 3-2. Timberwolves swept the Suns. Kevin Durant and LeBron James are both at home watching the playoffs the rest of the way because the Lakers lost in five to the Nuggets. See, the Celtics did beat the Heat in five games. Cavaliers and Magic still rolling along. Cleveland leads 3-2. The Pacers are just minutes away from putting the Bucks out of their misery for this season, up by 15 at the moment. And then the Knicks and the 76ers has been one of the funner series so far. I've actually watched some of that. Watched the Tyrese Maxey, another Kentucky kid, had a huge shot the other night to send it to overtime. And the 76ers staying alive in that one. So the Knicks lead 3-2 in that series as well. Dad, any other pressing needs that we need to talk about before we let you go tonight?
No, I don't think so. Like I said, it was an exciting draft. And, you know, we'll have more as we go along here, definitely with the playoffs that are coming up. So, and again, of course, baseball season's in full swing and a lot of fun to watch that too. So, and of course, with fantasy baseball, it's fun to keep up with that. And of course, you got your NASCAR segment next. And I have really enjoyed being in the fantasy NASCAR league. That has been a lot of fun. So looking forward to the season continuing there.
Yeah, I'm catching up to you, Dad. Slowly but surely, I'm right on your heels there in the fantasy NASCAR league. So we'll talk about that next, though. But Dad, as always, sure appreciate you coming on and taking some time for us.
Hey, glad to be here.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking NASCAR with Caleb McChesney.
Say hello to America's most wanted craft beef jerky. Over 15 flavors with all kinds of character. The number one jerky gift box and all natural black Angus quality made right here in the U.S. of A. Taste the flavor revolution at RighteousFelon.com. Use the promo code STOVE15 at checkout. That's RighteousFelon.com. Promo code STOVE15 at checkout.
Welcome back into the Sports Stove Podcast, presented by Righteous Felon Jerky. It's time for our final segment of the show. We call it the Sports Stove Final Lap. And joining us now, defending a driver that we never defend, and I'm sure so excited about Joe Milton to the Patriots as well. It's the one and only Caleb McChesney. Hey, Caleb, how you doing, man?
We were doing great until you said Joe Milton. you know, just out here enjoying my Thursday night, and you have to go ahead and remind me about the stupid comments I've had to deal with all week saying, oh, hey, maybe Joe Milton can take Drake May's job. Like... They're already calling Drake May Mac Jones 2.0, and they couldn't be goodness. Any dumber.
It's only because.
Listen, this is my break from Patriots, all right?
All right, so let's talk NASCAR. How about we do that for a little bit as well? Let's start with last week at Dover. Now, Dover, I did not get to watch or listen to any of Dover. So I did check in on the app to try to see what was going on. And as a matter of fact, I missed out on getting a driver put out of my garage and into my lineup, but nonetheless, Dover comes through and it seemed like everybody was relatively pleased with Dover.
No. Yeah. It was undoubtedly, unquestionably the best short track race that we've had this year besides, Bristol with that crazy tire early on in the year. The short track package has been really hard to figure out and get a grip on. And, Dover, it was certainly an improvement over Richmond and Martinsville, if we remember those two snoozers back in the back last month. Dover is usually one of my favorite tracks to watch. Obviously, as an Alex Bowman fan, that's a pretty good track for him. Was running up top five most of the race until he got squeezed on a pit road and kind of lost his mind on the radio. We can talk about that a little bit later if you want to.
Let's talk about it now.
Let's get it out now. So you missed it. So you don't even know what I'm talking about here.
I know what you're talking about because I've listened to a lot of things since the race. So I heard the playback and things like that. And it's intriguing to see this relationship between spotter, driver, and the issues that they have. And they seem like they shrugged it off, but give us your thought on it.
You know, Alex is usually a more reserved kind of guy. He's usually good for a sarcastic comment or two, which... really fits really well with me being him being my favorite driver, of course. Yeah. So yeah, it was interesting to kind of hear him snap back like that. Like, let me drive the effing race car back to his spotter. But he has every right to be kind of upset about how that pit road exchange went. He was the first guy off pit road. He did everything right. He just got squeezed. And to avoid a three car pileup, as Clint and Mike and Kevin Harvick in the booth were all saying, that's the move of the year, because he could have scrapped three race cars if he kept it three wide. And he took it for the team, and he restarted third, and I think he finished eighth. So eighth is a good, nobody's complaining about a top 10, but right. For Alex, I mean, Dover was one of his top three best tracks, and he got screwed out of one there a little bit.
So do you think that all's good in the world with Alex and his crew chief? Or not crew chief, but his spotter?
I'd more than assume so, yeah. I mean, after the race, Bowman seemed, fine. He's like, yeah, no, we were kind of over. I'm not giving you any clickbait on this or anything like that. So it seems that it's all kind of water on the bridge. And Kevin Hamlin was just kind of, no relation to Denny, was just trying to get the most out of his driver in that spot. And whether it worked or didn't work, I don't know. That's up for other people to decide. But I think it's all good in the 48 camp.
The driver that I failed to get in to the in time was Noah Gragson. I had him in my garage, and I could have replaced Buescher with him. But I'll tell you what, and I heard, I don't remember which podcast it was talking about this recently, but the Stewart Haas team is, they're there, like with the other Ford teams at the very least. They're there. And Chase Briscoe and Noah Gragson specifically, they're there, it seems like, all the time right now.
Yeah. So I have a couple of friends that are Stewart Haas fans, and I tell them, you want the good news or the bad news? The good news is Stewart Haas is probably the best top bottom Ford team that they got going right now. I mean, Ryan Blaney's doing everything he can, but Joey Logano and Austin Cindric look like they forgot how to drive. You got the Wood Brothers car, which is just kind of there. And then RFK, who just hasn't relived their 2023 success. So Stewart Haas seems to be the clear-cut best Ford team. But the bad news is Ford as a whole is not competing whatsoever in any of these races. I mean, you don't see them running up front and winning races that are at non-drafting tracks. Obviously at Talladega and Daytona and Atlanta, everybody has a fair shot. I mean, Blaney was this close at Atlanta.
Yeah.
Krasowski was a Michael McDowell stupid block away from winning. Michael McDowell was block away from maybe taking the win. So Ford, they got to figure it out. I'm not sure what it is about the manufacturer change. I mean, not the manufacturer change this year where they updated the Ford and made it a little more aero friendly. It seems like they made it more aero hostile. And they're not getting through the field like Chevy and Toyota are. And I get that everybody looks at these non-drafting tracks and they go, well, it's Hendrick and JGR winning every single one, which is true. But the top four teams aren't even there.
Yeah.
Not even there.
Yeah. I mean, they're in the top 10. The Ford drivers are, but they are not competing for race wins, like you said. And before we wrap up the Ford conversation, Ryan Blaney's the easy answer, but who's the first Ford to win a race this year?
Ryan Blaney is the easy answer. Keselowski's come close.
Yeah,
he's been in the top five a couple of times, especially on short tracks. Dover was kind of an aberration for him. I wrote on my three up, three down. He was top five in most of the short track races we've run this year, which is kind of the opposite of what it was 23, where he was dominating the 1.5s and the super speedways and just not showing up on the short tracks. So Keselowski feels like a good answer, but honestly, Noah Gragson is, I think, really behind Blaney, the best Ford out there week in, week out. And I say this as a guy who thought when he got thrown out of the 42, like, oh, this guy just sucks. Like, I was ready to write him off. Like, he needs more time in Xfinity and just get his crap together. He, as soon as he hopped in that 10 car, he's well beyond everything I thought he would be.
Yeah. He's looked good. He's fun to watch too. You mentioned Hendrick and JGR is winning everything, but Christopher Bell, I mean, he's
bad month.
That's a perfect way to put it. Bad month. It has not been pretty. Finished 34th last week.
His high for the month was P17, as I wrote.
My soul.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of the better young drivers out there. Something's just not hitting this year.
No, and again, it's early. I mean, you see you see teams turning around, and he obviously had success early in the year. We think of Cotto. We think of, I believe, Bristol was good for him. I need to go back and look. But Christopher Bell's had more than a fine car. The 20 team just had an off month. Couple of wrecks. Again, high finish of P17. It's just, you kind of want to just shrug it off. It's just one of those things that you just kind of got to work out of, and eventually it'll get better. And Kansas is a good spot for him. As much as I faded him this week, he's usually riding up there in the top 10. So I guess he's going to win this week for all of you guys that are looking for cars to bet on. He's a plus 800. I'm trying to think of other ones that are coming. Sonoma the week after that. He's a really good road course driver. And then you have the All-Star break, then the Coke 600. So I think these two races are really, really solid chances for him to get back in victory lane and figure it out. Obviously, his one win of the year coming at Phoenix at a short track. So just needs a little more diversity, needs just to get the vibes right. Just feel it out, work through it, grind it out, and eventually it'll get better. You're just going to have to have faith with that kind of driver, with that kind of car. It's JGR. It's the top Toyota team. It's a driver who's been in the championship for 2 years in a row. It's really easy to just panic, but I think that they just kind of need to work through the punches, and you shouldn't really get worried until you're in June and July and it's not getting right. But they do have the win in the back pocket, so they're going to make the playoffs.
Yeah. And I've got him in my lineup for this week at Kansas as well. I want to be there when he gets it right, if he gets it right. Let's talk about Kansas. And, you know, it's funny, you come into this week, Denny Hamlin coming off of another incredible performance.
Calling a shot.
And he stopped short of saying he's going to win at Kansas, but he basically said, I mean, it's a pretty good chance I'm going to win at Kansas. Good.
Yeah, I mean, he won the spring last year in similar fashion to how he won at Dover, just battling it out with Kyle Larson. Mm-hmm. Kansas was probably the race of the year, spring race last year. I hope they can deliver again. These 1.5 seem to deliver on this next gen car package, unlike the short tracks. So you can see a little bit of a difference there. And no, I think Kansas is a good shot to get a new winner, but obviously Denny Hamlin is Denny Hamlin, the probably one of the top three drivers in the sport right now.
Yeah.
It's a good track for him. It historically has been a good track for him. I wouldn't shock me in the least. But I used Denny last week, so we're not throwing him in the lineup this week.
Now, which I can never remember which week the playoffs start. Do you remember what number week that is?
I believe I don't know the number. I can guess the track. I believe it starts at Watkins Glen.
Oh wow!
Because of the 2 week Olympic break.
Yeah. So let's see. All-Star breaks in 2 weeks. Around 24, 25, I think would be the end of the regular season, but I could be wrong on that. Let's talk though about this week in Kansas. And cause I the reason I bring that up is,
I lied to you. The round of 16 begins Sunday, September 8th, 3 PM at the Quaker State 400 at Atlanta.
Oh boy. Okay. Fun times. Let's talk about this week at Kansas. And you've got to figure out, again, if you're using fantasy on NASCAR, which is pretty much the only place to get. There's other places, but
16 weeks away.
Okay. So when you get down to it, who should people look at this week? Maybe outside of the top guys, the William Byrons of the world and the Denny Hamlins of the world. Who are we looking at this week for fantasy?
23-11. I'll say it right there. Both those drivers, Tyler Reddick, really, really solid. I believe he won here in the fall. Bubba Wallace has two career wins. One of them is here in Kansas in 2022, so he's not that far removed. Those are two guys that I would certainly look at. Noah Gragson, like you said, one of the best Fords out there. You got if you have extra uses on him, like I do, you go ahead and toss him in there. Ross Chastain ran really, really good here. Obviously, the highlight of the race last year was him punching Noah Gragson in the face. So hopefully that your team has a positive environment to where these two can coexist. Those are definitely some guys. I really like Carson Hocevar. Again, I'm just waiting for him to just kind of surprise everybody and just get that win. He's when he's run fast, he looks really, really fast in that 77. Corey LaJoie should probably be embarrassed for how much he's getting outraced by his two rookie teammates in Zane Smith and Carson Hocevar. But no, those are some drivers that I really, really like. I forget who did I'm forgetting who I put on my picks. I know that one of them was Wallace.
Corey LaJoie had one of the better pictures of the year, sliding sideways down there at the finish line after the Michael McDowell mayhem. But outside of that, his season hasn't been that great for sure. So I'm going this week. I've got Chase Elliott in there. I got Denny Hamlin in there. I've been saving him a little bit. I got Kyle Busch. He's starting to make me believe slightly again that he can finish in the top 10.
No, Dover was good to him, but it was his first top five in 2-3 months.
Long time. Yeah.
I gotta see consistency before I really buy into you. I'm glad I didn't fade Kyle Busch this week, because I did last week. There he goes in the top five.
Yeah.
So no, Kyle Busch is a solid bet. I mean, RCR's gotta get it together at some point. I know that Austin Dillon is a liability, but you have you have a top three, top four, top five NASCAR driver of all time in Kyle Busch, won at every single level and done it really, really well. It's got to come together at some point. I really hope he's just not there collecting checks at this point. Like, he's still one of the better drivers up there.
That's what I was going to ask. Has he checked out at all? And it doesn't seem like he's the kind of guy who would do that, though. But he's got his kid racing, and he's got things going on in his life as well. Do you think maybe that's impacting how he's racing?
It's definitely made him not as aggressive as he might have used to be. Like, everybody says when Kyle Busch had kids, he calmed down a lot and he stopped putting himself in super, super unstable situations. So there's definitely less of that. Yeah. But I don't think he's checked out. I think RCR just hasn't put together a really good car. But again, how can we really say that when his teammate to compare to is Austin Dillon?
Which I think Austin Dillon still ranked higher than Bubba Wallace in the power rankings this week by Chris Prince. No, I'm kidding.
Of course. And I was about to say, ain't no way.
No, I'm just kidding. I've got Chase Briscoe in right now. I got Gregson as my garage. And I'll wait till again. I always wait till after qualifying, and then I might make a change or two after qualifying, depending on some things there as well. But I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see how, especially we get into this all-star week here in a couple weeks, to see if any tides start to shift a little bit, especially with Ford. We've seen him creeping up there. Even Keselowski, you mentioned him earlier. He's been running a lot better, here as of late as well. And I got to think that Ford, the manufacturer, had to be irate at Michael McDowell, because, you know, I feel like if he wouldn't have tried to dive down, he may have still won that race. Keselowski would have, if he wouldn't have, it would have been a Ford win. And everybody said the right things about McDowell. They love him. He's a good guy. He was doing everything he thought he needed to do. But, you know, I don't know if you heard him. Junior said he ran into him at the school pickup line and asked him about it. And McDowell said, "Be honest with me, what would you have done?" And Junior said, "Man, I would have made one block. If that didn't work, I would have just pushed it to the end." And McDowell said, "I was willing to die out there."
No kidding.
And he almost did. He almost took some people with him, too. But Ford has been that close a couple times now. And I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see when it turns, if it turns. And again, you go back to Atlanta. I asked this to the last two guests that we've had on, so I'll ask you, too. You go to Atlanta. If Ryan Blaney wins Atlanta, how much are we talking about Ford right now?
That's a good question. I still think there's still concerns. I mean, you still don't, again, Joey Logano, nowhere to be found outside of one runner up finish, at Richmond. And Richmond was kind of a stupid race, as we all agree. Yeah. Brad Keselowski here and there, hit or miss. Where the hell is Chris Buescher? I'm about to put his face on a milk carton at this point. And then again, Stuart Haas, a operation that hasn't had great success in a couple of years now at this point. Everybody thought they were circling the drain when Kevin Harvick left. They're your best Ford team.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're not running at the front competing for races. They are settling for top 10s, top 15s, and maybe squeaking a top five if they get lucky.
Yeah.
If Blaney won at Atlanta, I still think you're having a conversation, but we're not talking about they haven't won anything because obviously right. Blaney would obviously have the win, but it's still a huge, huge, huge concern, especially with Joey Logano. I mean, you're a two-time Cup Series champion and you're driving like that.
There are five Fords in the top 16 in points right now. There are five of them. There are five Toyotas in the top 16. And there's 6 Chevrolets. Now, granted, Chevy and Toyota are the top six. And Blaney's the only one.
You get four drivers each 10. With the Hendrick and JGR.
Right. Ford only has one in the top 10 right now. That's number 7, Ryan Blaney. But Briscoe, Logano, Buescher, and Keselowski in the top 16 as well. And you look past that line, you got guys like Daniel Suarez who won a race. So he doesn't have to be above that line right now.
Yeah, can't wait to watch Daniel Suarez in the playoffs.
Oh, my goodness.
Somebody who's probably going to deserve it a little better.
Now, there is a road race in the first three races, I believe, in the round of 16.
Watkins Glen.
Okay, so there you go. We might see Suarez in the
Kicking it off at Atlanta, a super speedway.
Yeah, yeah.
Good Lord. If there was any year for a random winner of the NASCAR Cup Series, this is it.
Yeah. Yep. Bonkers. So gracious. Okay. All right. Well, needless to say, we're a couple weeks away from the All-Star race. I'm going to try to get with you and Chris, and we'll do a belly up halfway there. Show and talk through the season so far and stuff like that. But Caleb, we always appreciate you taking time for us and chatting NASCAR. You've got I forget what you call it, but you've got your odds and things that you put out each week with your picks there on Belly.
The expert picks, if you will. Yeah.
Yes. Caleb McChesney expert picks there on bellyupsports.com. It's out there every single week. And then you've also, I can never remember if it's in the same article or a separate
three up,
article.
Three down. That's a different.
Okay.
That usually comes out that's like instant reaction after the race. That comes out Monday or Tuesday. And then picks come out Wednesday or Thursday, whenever Chris wants to fill in his stuff.
a little teamwork going on.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. The people wouldn't believe it on Twitter, but we're actually great teammates.
Yeah. You guys are, I was trying to think of good teammates to compare you to in NASCAR. I couldn't think of any good ones right off the bat, so I apologize. That being said, like I said, we do appreciate you and your time for us as well. Tell the fine folks where they can hear more of your opinions and where you post them.
Yep. So obviously, as you listed right there, those two pieces a week, that's where I get a lot of it, especially if I have a lingering thought, it'll also go up there on bellyupsports.com. You guys were talking about the NFL draft a little bit earlier. I gave you a huge thumbs up when you were talking about Drake May to New England, QB1, hopefully not rushed. You can check out my Patriot stuff on Foxborough Beat on Facebook. You can check it out on YouTube. We did 8 hours of streaming for the NFL draft, and my voice was gone. It took me a while to get that back, but we have it back, so that's good. And yeah, Foxborough Beatcast on YouTube. That's some good stuff. We put out an episode this week. Good stuff. A lot of fun. And yeah, I'll have a lot more free time in the next couple of weeks. I graduate from UNH in next Sunday or 2 Sundays from now.
Man, congrats. There's nothing better than being done with school.
Yeah, it's either exciting or terrifying, I tell people. I'm not sure which one it is yet.
Oh, trust me, it's a wonderful thing to be out of school. There's not a day I look back and think, man, I wish I was still in school. So congrats to you, Caleb.
Thank you.
For sure. We'll see you back here in a few weeks, and maybe we'll be on Belly Up together here in the near future as well. Caleb McChesney from Belly Up Sports, thanks again, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, friends, thanks for tuning in to tonight's edition of the Sports Stove Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sports Stove. Make sure you go buy yourself some jerky, righteousfelon.com. You use the promo code STOVE15. You're going to get 15% off your purchase, and you're going to thank me because it is phenomenal beef jerky. Bootleg and barbecue is my favorite. It's right up here in the the blue package right there. Bootleg and Barbecue is a phenomenal flavor. I absolutely love it. It's got some kick to it, but also barbecue flavor. So check it out. And make sure you check us out. Sunday night, we'll be live at 8 o'clock talking fantasy baseball on the Sports Stove Fantasy Baseball Show. Monday night, we'll be talking EKU sports on the Sports Stove Local Hour. And the plan is for next Wednesday night, we'll be back right here to talk, not EKU, but any sports, all sports, everything going on. Major League Baseball, NBA and NHL playoffs, NFL news as well. And, of course, more NASCAR coverage. Thanks so much for tuning in to tonight's edition of the Sports Stove Podcast. Until next time, we'll see you around the Sports Stove.